All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are finally covering one of the most talked about movies of 2019. I was thinking about waiting to record this intro until we find out about the Oscar nominations, because it's probably going to be up for a whole bunch of stuff. But this is the week before that. It just won Best Foreign Language Film at the Golden Globes, did not win Best Picture Drama or Best Director. Many people thought it might. It is, of course, Bong Joon-ho's Parasite. If you don't know it, it's a Korean film. It deals with class warfare, although really you should go watch it first and then come back and listen to this. Everybody's been talking about it. Anyone who is part of the film world, the world of talking about films online, knows about this movie. It's been something that's been talked about nonstop all throughout 2019, and it is one of a few movies I did not want to move on into 2020 without having gotten a chance to talk about. And I'm glad to finally be talking about it with my old buddy Q from the Bird Road podcast, and of course my boss here at All Points West Network. So yeah, we got a great conversation. It's a little bit of a quick one, but we get some really good puzzle pieces in. So great episode coming up here in a second on Parasite. First, I do want to remind you, make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and also on Podchaser. Follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join the Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. You know what? Let's get into this conversation about Parasite. All right. So today on the show, we've got with us David Quiñones. How's it going?
I'm splendid.
You don't sound so sure about that.
I'm fine. Let's move on.
Okay, let's move forward. We're going to talk about Parasite, which I think this might be the longest I've gone between seeing a movie and finally covering it here on PC.
Yeah, I know. It's unfortunate. Although this is a movie that you kind of have to let... I don't know about for you. I don't think you like this movie quite as much as I really liked it, but this is a movie that needs to simmer a little bit.
It does. It absolutely does. Actually, that is something. This movie has very much grown for me as I've moved further away from it and like really thought about, you know, what exactly he was trying to do with it, what he's trying to say, and different, you know, we'll get into that as we get into some of these puzzle pieces, but I do like it quite a bit more than when it first came out. It's also a movie, and people have been asking me about Parasite for months now, like, oh, is Parasite really, you know, as good as people say? And I almost want to like temper their expectations, because that's part of the problems I went into it. Like, oh, okay, this weekend I'm going to see the greatest movie ever made, according to everybody on Twitter.
Right. And the other quandary with Parasite is when you're presenting it for other people or preparing it for other people is reading the room. Like, this is not a movie for everybody. And there's a lot of people who, you know, even if there are people who appreciate, I don't know what you would call this, auteurish cinema, I guess.
Sure.
Like people who aren't just Michael Bay fans. By the way, you got to get me on for Six Underground. You still haven't done a Six Underground episode.
I half watched it on New Year's Day, but
it's
I was kind of out of it.
It's probably the best movie of the last 25 years. Six Underground is incredible. But this movie, even if it's people who aren't, you know, Michael Bay, shoot 'em up, like, you know, kind of basic bitch movie people, if they're people that have some taste or, you know, some insight into what makes, you know, auteurish movies good, this is still, there's like a 50-50 chance that it's not going to be up their alley and that it won't really land and that they'll ingest it as nothing more than the typical auteurish fare.
Yeah, it's funny. I was actually just thinking about that yesterday. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood just came out on streaming, and the amount of people in my, especially Facebook feed, not so much Twitter feed, who are like, finally saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. God, was that boring.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, who are these people? Like, you know, they apparently can't get into this kind of a movie, something that's, you know, maybe got a little bit under the surface that you actually have to pay attention for and, you know, really like get into if you're going to enjoy it. It's not just going to be just a total just... assault you with action the whole time or nonstop joke a minute kind of thing. Although this is a funny movie and it's got some action in it.
It's funny. It does have some action in it, and it has tension and those thriller moments in it. But the message isn't immediately accessible. It's not. Right. It's not that overt. And I guess we'll get into that as we start talking about what the influences were. I will say, toughest. I've been on, I don't know how many of these, four or five piecing it together's. Toughest one. This is very much a singular movie, very unique. I don't think that the director Bong Joon-ho is influenced by a lot of cinema. I think he's, I think he's mostly an original creation.
He absolutely is. He has an original voice, 100%. And we could still find things that we could talk about. So why don't we jump into the first one? What do you got for your first piece? And yeah, we probably won't have a lot of pieces on this one, but let's see what you got first.
So I did a little bit of research, and I actually watched some things that mine are going to be a little esoteric and weird, but I will start off with one that's pretty pretty on point. And the thing that I couldn't stop thinking about during the course of this entire movie, and it's not a movie at all. It's actually a TV show, originally a British show that is that ran for I think a couple of seasons or series, as they call them over there. And then came over here and has now been going strong on Showtime for, I think, 13 years. A show called Shameless, which stars William H. Macy and a whole cast of younger folks. The main, up until her departure from the show, the other main character was Fiona Gallagher, who was played by, oh God, what is Sam Esmail's girlfriend's name?
I don't know.
Emmy Rossum.
Oh, and, okay.
Yeah, so... incredible show. At this point, it's been on so long that I'm not really sure if anybody's watching it anymore. It's not really part of the zeitgeist, but it was, you know, it follows the Gallagher family, who are these, you know, low-end South Side Chicago dirtbags that run scams. They don't have they're just generationally impoverished. They have all these, you know, horrible genetic traits of alcoholism and violence and just all of these different things that sort of work together with the system of capitalism that we exist in to keep them down. The show over its many years has done a great job of showing how equally to blame and not romanticizing. I think a lot of times when we show or we depict the poor or the impoverished, there's a tendency to romanticize them. Be like, right. Look at how poor they are. It's not their fault they're in this situation. And one thing that I found refreshing as somebody who grew up really poor, about Parasite and that I love about Shameless is that they don't let them off the hook. They're dirtbags. They're complete pieces of shit, and they don't try to. But they're still human, you know. Like that doesn't mean that they're not worthy of being treated with dignity. So, my number one. I don't know if you've ever seen an episode of Shameless or not, but William H. Macy has really just like kicked ass for the last 13 years on that TV show.
Yeah, that's a show I did watch like the first, I don't know, three episodes or something. Really liked it, just never got to really get into it and continue. But I like that piece a lot. And I like, you know, what you're saying there about, you know, about them basically being dirtbags. I mean, that's another thing of that barrier of entry for this movie is I think, you know, people who are given the scoop on what it is beforehand are going to be like, oh, another rich people are bad movie, you know? Right. But really, that's kind of the beauty of it is that it's not that. It's everybody's bad, you know? And that is going to, factor into some of my pieces for sure. But I like that Shameless as a first piece. That's great.
So what do you got, Dave?
So my first one, I think, is a pretty obvious one. And I actually, after having written it down, did end up finding somewhere where Bong acknowledged this, that he was surprised when the initial trailer for this other movie came out and was like, oh, there's another movie, a new movie, exploring a lot of the same themes. And that is Jordan Peele's Us.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. In Us, there's this class of people who live underground and they are tethered to the people who live in the regular world. And, you know, the people in the regular world get to, you know, enjoy the luxuries of, you know.
I have a literal child here and she's making less noise than that.
Harvey, stop being a literal child. They get to live, you know, in the regular world and enjoy, you know, a regular life on the backs of these people who live underground and have to do some of the harder parts of the world and have to, you know, like, for example, the guy underground is, you know, making the light go off and on all the time. And, you know, the main family just kind of takes it for granted that, oh, there's a short in the light just coming on and off. Not even really thinking about who or the fact that there could be someone controlling this stuff. And it's just, there's a lot of levels to that of taking for granted that, oh, there is a class underneath that is controlling some of the things, or not necessarily controlling, but helping to operate some of the things that go into everyday life.
Yeah. And over on our other show, Bird Road, which is, you know, very much about politics and, you know, culture and fart jokes, I guess, but also like we've talked before about how, you know, that's a feature, not a bug, of capitalism, right? Like,
yes,
that in order for us to even, you and me, just to live our generally like middle class normal existence, like there has to be for every one of us three or four people who are immiserated and and just barely hanging on and are, you know, smashing their head against a light switch to turn it on and off for us. Like, yeah, there has to be pain, there has to be suffering, there has to be tethered people, there has to be. I personally, and I'm interested to hear what you think about Us. I don't think we ever talked about that movie together. Where do you put that? I know you only has two movies, but I guess in the pantheon of that like new horror, like, did you like Us? What'd you think of Us?
The thing about Us is I think it tries too hard to answer all of its questions. And yeah, it drags the movie down way too much. It asks too many questions, answers too many, doesn't answer enough. And it just kind of goes up its own ass a little bit as far as storytelling is concerned. I think Jordan Peele is a really effective filmmaker, though. I think he is going to make some really incredible movies in his career. I just think he, you know, maybe didn't have a full plan in place when he went into that one.
I wasn't super fully on board with Us. I thought it was good. It was a good movie. You and I had a thread recently where we were talking about potentially creating the best first time director award. Mm-hmm. And that reminds me, he's like the perfect example of that, right? Where I don't think he had directed a feature before Get Out, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Unless he had done that Keanu movie, I'm not sure. But
yeah, I don't know if that counts.
No, no one's awarding that, though.
That's not getting any awards. So, Dave, from one of the more progressive filmmakers of color to of our day, as we you know, transition from your puzzle piece Us to my next piece, a film that's not that. A film that I actually went and watched and is available on YouTube and that you can actually find and is very old. I didn't watch all of it, but I was in my research. I found that there was so many comparisons to this and Parasite that I had to check it out. It's a movie called Intolerance. Intolerance was put out in 1916. It's a silent film, obviously, 1916. Directed by D.W. Griffith. Does that name ring any bells, Dave?
No.
So D.W. Griffith, the director of Intolerance, had just come off of a movie in 1915 that he had made called Birth of a Nation. So any film buff knows that Birth of a Nation is a very controversial movie that depicted the Ku Klux Klan in a in sort of a valiant, in a positive light, and very much, you know, in tune with the times, portrayed African Americans and slaves as cartoonish and very negatively.
Sure.
Horribly racist movie, especially if you look back at it and watch it with modern day, I guess, sensibilities. Now, what's funny about this movie, which was like a set of four different vignettes that explored different class struggles from like ancient Babylon through like biblical times, through the Renaissance, and then sort of a more modern American story that was set in 1914. And all of them explored similar class struggles to what Parasite did, or what Parasite dived into. what was what I thought was funny about this was the movie's title, while each one of the vignettes was about their own type of intolerance, the movie's title itself was actually D.W. Griffith's sort of parry back at people who he said were intolerant of Birth of a Nation. So I just thought that that had a lot of resonance with the modern moment that we're in, where this, like, you know, you and I talk about this all the time with, you know, where does a creator end? Where does a creator end and the commercial response begin? Like, sure. What should people be allowed to make? Is there anything that people shouldn't be allowed to make? And I wanted to have something a little bit more esoteric like this to add into the conversation, that, you know, 104-year-old movie that, you know, is actually really incredible to watch. It looks really good considering it's 104 years old.
And, yeah, I wonder if that is the oldest puzzle piece that's been cited on this show, or if one of my film nerd co-hosts has brought something up that was earlier. I don't know. It's possible. But yeah, no, it sounds like it definitely, you know, is a good one to bring up.
What do you got?
So next up for me, when I first saw this movie, because I went in blind other than all of the insane praise, and I purposely did not watch the trailer. I wanted to just totally go in blind because I had heard that that is the best way to do it. And so when I started watching, and it was this like clever, cute comedy about these people running a con on this family, you know, at least up until the big shift at the end, I kept thinking, this is like a 90s Steve Martin movie, like an 80s or 90s Steve Martin movie. So I thought of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels as a puzzle piece while I was in the theater. And
the first two acts, I would say, are definitely Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Yeah.
Yeah. A total, just a clever, fun scam based comedy. And I could totally see Steve Martin in his prime, you know, especially being the dad role or something like that, you know, as they go through this whole process of getting the whole family to scam their way into this house.
Steve Martin was probably, when I was young, you know, like too young to really know what's good yet in the 80s, like just a little kid. Steve Martin was such an important bridge. You know, like he was goofy and silly, and then he was also in stuff where I remember the first time watching L.A. Story, which I don't know if that's a movie that really holds up that much, but
I just watched it last year for the first time, actually. Or at least I think it was the first time. I didn't remember it. I loved it. It was so good. Yeah.
And I remember watching it and having that thought that you have when you're little, when you're young and you're sort of starting to become who you're going to become. And knowing, like, okay, this is good. This is what something good is. And, like, not like, oh, Voltron kicked somebody's ass and I loved it. It was fun. But, like, no, this is something that's good. That's very well made. And, again, I haven't seen L.A. Story for a while. I think it would probably still hold up. It was a great movie. But, yeah, Steve Martin helped. He was in, like, kind of a not great movie. A movie that was a little up its own ass called Grand Canyon. And
don't think I ever saw that one.
In the early 90s, I was still really young when that came out, and I was still in that age where you're like starting to like the things that you're going to like, you know, for your life. And I remember thinking too, like, oh, this is something that's good, or at least it's trying to be good. And like understanding the difference between, you know, just like run-of-the-mill movies and movies that have something to say.
Steve Martin kind of rules.
Yeah, Steve Martin kicks ass.
So what do you got next, Q?
All right, so next for me is another very not well-known movie that I don't even know if you can still find it. I haven't seen it since I was
deep for this.
I went really deep for this. And this movie actually had a Wikipedia entry on it. Otherwise, I couldn't have been able to remember. My last two puzzle pieces, I couldn't remember the titles of. I had to like go searching for them because I haven't seen them in over 20 years.
Yeah.
So this puzzle piece is Eating Raoul. Have you ever heard of Eating Raoul?
Definitely heard of it. I think I saw it like a long, long time ago.
When we were kids, it was the kind of movie that would be on like right before Toxic Avenger was on. Like it was that kind of a movie.
Yeah.
So like it's a 1982 black comedy directed by Paul Bartel, who didn't really do a whole lot else. It had Mary Woronov, Robert Beltran, Ed Begley Jr., Buck Henry, Susan Sager. It was about this married couple, and this is what stuck out to me. It was this married couple that was running like a cigar shop, they worked at like a wine and cigar shop, right? And they basically would push their, I don't remember if it was like that they were cooking the people, like some of the rich people that would come to their cigar and wine shop, they would either kill them, cook them, and serve them or something like that. But it had a lot of the same overtones. And it's a crazy movie. I honestly wish that I could tell you where to go watch it. I don't even think it's anywhere you can find. I think it's a movie that's lost to history. It's from 1982. Maybe it's on some streaming channel somewhere, but I don't know, Dave, if you ever saw this one, but this is one of those ones that we were watching when we were little kids. It would just be on, and you knew you shouldn't be watching it because there was sex, and there was like people getting drunk, and there was like fucked up stuff. And I mean, you were like 7, 8, 9 years old, and you knew that you weren't supposed to be watching it, and if your parents caught you, you'd be in trouble. But
just looked it up, and it is in the Criterion collection, so it must be on that Criterion channel.
There you go.
That's pretty awesome.
Maybe I'll go watch it.
Yeah, I got to revisit that because I'm sure I saw it back in the day. Like you said, one of those that weird adult movies that like you're like, what the hell is this? But you're like, this is kind of great when you're a kid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Love
it. It has that childish sort of whimsy to it that I think that Parasite had.
I love that so far we've gotten in our puzzle pieces, we've gotten William H. Macy, Steve Martin, and Ed Begley Jr. What a great like trio of comedic actors, like just schmucky comedic
cast those
actors.
Guys.
Seriously. Yeah. My God. All right.
I got one more after this, Dave. What do you have?
Okay. So my next puzzle piece, a movie I love to bring up on Piecing It Together. It is Darren Aronofsky's Mother.
Oh, Jesus.
Yes. Well, I hadn't thought of this until this morning, actually. But, there's obviously plenty of ways to look at Mother and different layers of what it's saying and all that. But I think the best way to read it and the most important takeaway from it is that people are terrible and they are parasites that are destroying this planet, you know? So I think that looking at Parasite from the most cynical point of view is everybody being just terrible, you know, like we were talking about earlier. Of course, you know, you root for these people, you know, certainly through the first half of the movie, then things fall apart and get violent and get horrible. But, you know, nobody's good, really, in this situation. And I tend to lean towards everybody being bad in real life, too. So,
the thing that really sets Parasite apart from a lot of the movies that we're talking about is just the suddenness and the tragedy of the ending of it, and the way that it closes up. And it separates it from my last puzzle piece, which is a movie that, thank God I did my research, but because I almost called it the wrong thing.
Okay.
In my head, I thought that I was talking about a movie. I thought I was talking about the movie Down and Out in Beverly Hills, which is not the movie that I wanted to talk about. That's like an old Nick Nolte vehicle that from the 80s. The movie I actually wanted to talk about, and again, thank God I looked it up, was the Natasha Lyonne movie Slums of Beverly Hills from 1998, which is another sort of black comedy film. It starred Lyonne, Alan Arkin, Marissa Tomei. They were this broke family that was living in Beverly Hills as a way to keep. What they were doing was it's set in the 70s, I think in 1976, and Alan Arkin's character, because of the energy crisis, he can't find a decent job selling Oldsmobiles, and they're basically living on the come. They're living like, you know, just hand to mouth, renting apartments and then moving from apartment to apartment as they're getting evicted, all in Beverly Hills, all in an effort to keep Natasha Lyonne and her brother in the prestigious good schools in that school district. Right. And it's a movie about a family that's pulling scams. It's a movie about a family that's perpetually broke. And it's a movie about a family that there's some divisions and disagreements and fights, but they mostly love each other and have each other's back. And at the same time, some of them want to break apart and do their own thing, which was a theme in Parasite, where there's the famous scene, I thought was a really iconic scene in the living room where they were just kind of bullshitting with each other, getting drunk,
right,
and
yeah.
talking about like what they would plan to do. And yeah, that energy is very strong in Slums of Beverly Hills, which came out in 98, and it was a good movie. I would recommend anybody watch it.
Absolutely. Wasn't that one they used to play on Comedy Central a lot?
I feel like that used to be on Comedy Central all the time.
Yeah, in between Chris Farley reruns. Yeah. But yeah, no, great movie. And I hadn't thought about it in a long time. That would be interesting to revisit. But yeah, great piece. And I will do one more. This is a movie I haven't seen since high school. I honestly mostly just remember the box art. But then I thought of it and I looked it up and I was like, hell yeah, that totally would make for a good puzzle piece for this movie. It's Wes Craven's 1991 horror film, The People Under the Stairs.
Oh, I almost picked this.
Yeah. And, you know, these kids, they go into this house looking to rob it, and they find out that something, you know, horrible is happening in that house. And yeah, I mean, these people, they're going into this house and they're basically, you know, living off of this family, you know, and find out, oh, that there's this terrible thing happening in the base.
I mean, like, literally, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Parasite yet, and if you haven't seen Parasite, go see it, but yes. There are literally people living under the stairs.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, that is, you know, once that is set in motion, that's when this movie begins to take a very different tone. And that's where a lot of, you know, the really interesting things that Bong has to say with this movie really starts to come out, with especially with there being, you know, you've got this poor family that is, you know, scamming their way into this rich family's house, but then there's people even worse off than them, living even further underground, and just how that cycle just, you know, continues. And it's pretty damn bleak, but it's very, very well done, the way that there's different levels to that and literal levels to it as you get under the stairs. So
I like it, Dave.
Yeah. So that's a quick list. Let's do the finished puzzle list and we'll get into some closing thoughts on Parasite. But the list includes Shameless, Us, Intolerance, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Eating Raoul, Mother, Slums of Beverly Hills, and The People Under the Stairs. So, Q, got any closing thoughts on Parasite?
I loved Parasite. Parasite was my favorite movie of 2019.
All right.
other than maybe Six Underground.
Yeah.
It's not fair to compare any other movie to Six Underground. But yeah, it was... It was great. Again, it was singular. It was unique. It was original. It's hard to do a show like this, to try to find like these common threads, because guaranteed that not one of the things that you and I just said has Bong Joon-ho actually drawn any kind of real inspiration from. He's a creature of his own mind, and
it's kind of like our Irishman episode. It's like, you know, come on, it's Martin Scorsese. You know, he doesn't have influences. You know, he does, but they're from the 20s on back. You know,
right? His influences are from like like a racial slur that somebody yelled at him in the 40s when he was a teenager. Like that's what his influences are. Abuse. Like his influences are like people dying of the gripe. In the fucking depression. Like his film is not what he gets, you know, totally. What he gets influenced by.
Well, yeah, I like I said, this movie really did grow on me quite a bit. I it raised way up my list as I was making my end of the year list of movies. And I do think also, as far as movies that deal with class warfare, or, you know, the disparity between the different classes, I think this is one of the best movies that deals with that issue, and that is a very popular thing to deal with right now. I mean, I didn't use them as puzzle pieces, but things like Ready or Not and even Knives Out. And there's been a lot of movies this year that have dealt with it and the last couple of years. And I think that that's going to be something we continue to see with the way the things that we talk about on Bird Road all the time have been going. One last thing I did want to talk about before we close this thing up is it seems like, as much as it really shouldn't happen, it seems like an American remake is pretty much inevitable. What do you think about the prospect of that?
I don't think that, first of all, I don't think that Bong is going to do that. So it would be a different, it would be a different vision. It would be somebody else doing it.
Right.
Yeah, didn't you want to like try to figure out who would play who?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any like specifics for specific characters, just like some people whose like energy I thought I could see in something like this. Uh-huh. I definitely, the first person I went to was Jason Bateman. I could totally see him in something like this, maybe in the dad role of the loser dad, or the douchey dad?
The rich dad or the poor dad?
The poor dad, the Kim family.
Jason Bateman. Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. I can see that. Just kind of put upon.
Yeah. And yeah. And like,
yeah.
And like, quick, everybody, come on. We got to do this. You know, yeah. That kind of thing. I also thought Tom Holland is possibly the main character, the main guy. I couldn't think for the main girl, the one who does that little mnemonic device thing at the door that everybody loves so much.
What about the girl that was, what about the girl that's in all the fucking Star Wars movies? Daisy Ridley.
That's not too bad, I guess.
I mean,
I see that.
I think she's going to have a Hayden Christensen problem. She's going to be typecast. Like, and yeah. It's going to be hard for her to do anything else.
She will live on in memes, though. That's
right. Yeah, Hayden Christensen was a damn good actor. I assume he still is. I'm sure he's not dead, but, like, yeah, I don't know.
Well, one thing, one of our listeners, actually, on Twitter had a really great point in a tweet. Zach Brigman, his name is. He said that if they were going to do this, which they shouldn't, of course, but give it to Neil Blomkamp and let him finish his trilogy of haves versus have-nots movies with District 9 and Elysium.
Yeah.
Elysium was terrible. Let's get that out of the way. But District 9's fantastic, and he should definitely get to wrap that up, do a third one in this kind of a, you know, have-not struggle kind of thing.
You know how you win me over for recasting in this? You cast the mom, the poor mom.
Uh-huh.
Anne Dowd. You know Anne Dowd?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be the mom. Like the shot putter. Yeah. I could see Anne Dowd getting some clearance on a shot put, getting, you know. Like that. By the way, what a great little detail to make it that the mom was like a champion shot putter.
Yeah.
Like just a little thing that, you know, whatever. Fucking great.
I like it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Oh, almost forgot. Real quick before we go. What's another movie you saw recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Oh, I saw Climax.
Oh, you watched my favorite movie of 2019.
It was great. I loved it. I tried to get my wife to watch it, and I tried to tell her, like, okay, I'm going to shut this off halfway through because you're not going to like the second half. And she was like, ugh. And she was already, if I'm recommending something, she doesn't want to hear it or watch it. And then I told her it was by Gaspar Noé, and she immediately knew who he was and was like, no, because she's like, I guess she was scarred by some old movie of his like 15 years ago where there was like
Irreversible?
A very great, very gratuitous rape scene. And she was like, nope, not watching that.
He's very famous for that. Yeah.
Yeah. So she.
Yeah. I figured she would either like this movie because of the subject matter or hate it because of Gaspar Noé. So, yeah, I figured definitely go one way or the other.
She wasn't feeling it, so we didn't end up watching it.
All right.
I watched it, though, and I loved it. I thought Climax was great.
I think that about does it. Q, why don't you plug Bird Road for a minute?
Nope.
No?
Okay. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. You can listen to Bird Road. It's on the All Points West Network. It's everywhere that podcasts are found.
All Are you tired of stumbling across the same old kind of podcast show with a couple of white guys every other day, talking about different forms of entertainment such as movies, music, video games? Well, too bad, because we got another one for you. Introducing the world's most unoriginal and anti-niche podcast ever, the Podwood Forecast. Hosted by Mitchell Owens.
I steal money from poor innocent people who got in car crashes.
And yours truly, Clifford Close. This is a podcast we do for fun where we talk about the little things we enjoy. The Podwood Forecast. Available on any podcast platform.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Parasite. If you haven't seen it yet, you should. It's still out in some theaters, and then I hear, depending on where you live, that there's a black and white version coming out. But, of course, the reason why we scheduled it for release this week is because it is now available for rent and to purchase on demand. So definitely go check this movie out. It is worth seeing, and it's probably going to clean up a lot of major awards and at the Oscars in a couple weeks. So definitely make sure you see this thing. So that does it for today. I want to remind you all, as always, to make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. Follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join the Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. And of course, you can sign up for our Patreon, where this episode has been available for a couple of weeks now. But sometimes when we record an episode and we're holding on to it until a VOD release, we put them up on the Patreon early. Also, we're going to be recording some special bonus content for there. Also, I'm going to be releasing some music stuff early in there as well soon. More details on that to come. But first, I got to get back on track. I've been sick for the past week. It's been throwing me all kinds of off, which you wouldn't know considering we had three episodes last week, but they were all in the can and they were all ready to go. So that made things a little easy for me while I stayed in bed and slept through all of last week. But I think I'm just about better and ready to start recording some new episodes. So lots of new stuff coming your way. So with that said, I think we should close this thing off with a piece of music as we always do. And I think a good, weird, dark track to go with the kind of themes that end up getting explored in a movie like Parasite. One of my favorite tracks from my album, An Unseen Sky, it's a track called A Stranger. I love this track. I always wanted to make a music video for this one, and maybe we eventually will, because, you know, there's no reason not to. All I got to do is get a team together, get some people together, and make this thing come to life. And I think that still might happen one of these days, but for now, I gotta record some new music, I gotta make more podcasts, and I gotta play you this track, A Stranger. We'll be back with more Piecing It Together coming up later this week. We'll be right back.
and all points west.